It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this penultimate day of May 2019, May the 30th, 2019. This is the Horn, headon.live is where we live on the interweb tubes. And, of course, if you run over to headon.live and you click chat room, you will be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and other early arrivers, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space to become Man Cave and has provided a photo this evening. If you get there later, just ask him. I'm sure he'll put it up again. Of the adorable little fox kits that are out there where he's folded space in Northern California. He'll also be moderated by pinch hit utility midweek chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. So we're ready to roll. For this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And after last night's epic midweek special Wednesday on the front porch to deal with the Mueller statement, well, we've got other stuff to go over now. Lots of other stuff. Oh, yeah. And so that's, you know, it should be a fairly diverse. Oh, that's from the net. Okay, my bad. Those are not picked. Well, Sparky, you need to take some pictures of the get your long range zoom lens out and take some pictures of your kits. He says they're still out by the tree. Okay, well, okay, but that picture's from the net. Never mind. All right, I'm sure Sparky will share them if he takes some pictures of the little foxes. Sure. We've got some turf to cover. This evening, we've got massive amounts of thorn in the side sort of stupidity with which to deal. And let's see, we've got a couple other things too. Need to say some thank yous. Every program, almost every program, begins with a degree of gratitude because it is y'all who keep this program on the air. And that includes everybody who kicks in a la carte, like last night, and everybody who subscribes day by day by day. And it includes our Patreon, our Patreon subscribers, who knock down a couple of days of funding every month. Okay? So just taking care of a couple of pieces of business here. I'm getting ready. Got to have the Green News Report ready to roll. And then we'll get to our Patreon subscribers. Okay. Oh, by the way, we have had some thunderstorms pass through over the course of the day, so the usual warnings apply. Frontier Communications does not have a great track record of staying on the air when thunder and lightning go by. Yeah, what's that, billable Rick? Stop, stop telling us, Bob, stop telling us how to take pictures of our fox kits. Yeah, I had that one coming. Yeah, I sure did. But let's see here. This will only take a second. Maybe more than a second or two, because the internet is right crappy for some reason or another. Let's see. Shouldn't be this complicated. Well, daggone it. Sometimes, how about that? After all this time, a correction from Ron and Raleigh. Minor correction. Ron and Raleigh says, I hear you refer to Sparky as a Spacing Guild Master. There are no masters in the Spacing Guild. Sparky is a third stage Spacing Guild Navigator. I didn't say this. I wasn't here. Many machines on Ix. Yes. Well, they've redone their web page at Patreon and made it a lot more complicated to find one's list. There we go. Yeah, thanks very kindly to our Patreon subscribers. Thank you to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, very, very much. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina, to Alec, and to Alex. Alec in Portland, and Alex in Kentucky. Thank you to Andrea in California. Thank you to Andy the Angry Jew. Thank you to Annette in Massachusetts. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Barb in Minnesota. To Barbara in Philly. Thank you to Brendan. Thank you to David. Thank you to another David. Sometimes you get an address, sometimes you don't. Thank you to Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan. Thanks to Irwin in North Dakota. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Frank. Thank you to Fab, Frank, in California. Thank you to Glenn. Thanks as well to Greg. Thank you to Hamilton in Texas. Thank you to our buddy Horst in Taiwan. Thank you to John. And thank you to James. Thank you to Jason. Thanks as well to Jenny in Wisconsin. Thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. Thanks to Jim in California. Thank you to Joanne. Thanks as well to Joey. Thanks to John in Maryland, and John, different John. Thank you to John Johannes in Colorado. Thank you to John in Wisconsin. Thank you to Joyce. Thanks as well to Carl in Texas, to Kat in Ohio. Thank you to Kimberly in North Carolina, to Lori in California, to Peggy in the sandbox, to Mark. Thank you to Marty. And thanks as well to Matthew in California. Matt, our buddy up in Humboldt County. Thank you to Michael. And thank you to Nick in Ohio. Thanks to Patrick in Germany. Thanks to Ron in Delaware. Thanks as well to Robin. Thank you to Rocky. Thank you to Ruth in Ohio. To Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you to Stephen in Wisconsin. To Susan. To Terrace in California. Thank you to TJ in California. Thanks to Thomas. And thanks to Otto and to Tina. Thanks to our buddy Hung Like Jesus. And thanks to Vernon in San Diego. Those are our Patreon subscribers, and we very much appreciate your participation over there. It's important, more important than you know. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know. Hot on both streams, Botanist Bob, for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yes, so thank you. Mm-hmm. So, thorns. Yeah, let's go ahead and get after some of those. Interesting day today. They all are. What's that? Last night's discussion, Steve in New York. Says, got to tell you, it was great to listen to last night. Lots of interesting insight. I confess I was more from Briteau's way of thinking about Mueller's remarks. Regardless of who was right, I loved how Trump had a coronary when Fox was saying that what Mueller said about no collusion and no exoneration contradicted Barr. Every day, every step. Yes, indeed. Randy wants to know why I'm reading the Patreon subscribers on the last of the month when the contributions come out on the first. Because these are the days of the month when we have no other, that these are empty days for thanking people, Randy. So that way we can do it and there's no confusion with people who are doing the PayPal thing. That's why. Oh, getting started with a little, another great has gone. Leon Redbone passed away. His was a most unique voice in his era. Sort of a Tin Pan Alley style. 69 years old. But the death notice said he was 127. It's worth going back and giving his music a listen. Oh, sorry about that pause. Pollen. Lovely, lovely evening. Did I do the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part? Well, I am. So, there's that. So there was the usual press gaggle as Julius Geezer, the nitwit Nero, went out to get on Marine One, the helicopter. But, and he always says stupid Trump-like things. But today was kind of interesting. Because, among other things, he tweeted today that Russia did help him get elected. It's sort of a confession. But then he doubled down on it. Check this out.
This is a study of Russia. Why didn't they invest the insurance policy? In other words, should Hillary Clinton lose, we've got an insurance policy. Guess what? What we're in right now is the insurance policy.
Yeah. Straight up confession. That the Russians were behind helping him get elected. This will, of course, cause great consternation and conniptions among the various and sundry, well, the horseshoe left and the horseshoe right, who keep saying that, on the one hand, that sweet, lovable, cuddly Vlad Putiput couldn't possibly do anything like that because he's so sweet and lovable and cuddly. And the other side is no collusion. It's kind of tough to maintain that when Julius Geezer is out there saying, yep, they did it. No doubt about it. Sparky pointing out, Trump thinks the courts can save him from impeachment. What a maroon. Oh, no kidding. Once again, the Dunning-Kruger effect on bold display. He does not know what he does not know. Yeah. But like I said, there's other stuff for this thorn in the side Thursday, like, how about the Democrat governor of Nevada? The Nevada legislature is the first state legislature to be majority female in the history of the United States. And they got busy, and they did their job, and they passed a bill that would require that the electoral votes of Nevada be assigned to the candidate that nationally wins the popular vote. It's a workaround for that vile relic of our vicious slavery past known as the Electoral College. It's also proof that what we really need to do is amend the Constitution to flat out get rid of the Electoral College. I mean, some things, look at it this way. And this is creepy as hell. Do you remember when, back in January of 2011, the Republicans took over in the so-called Tea Party Revolution, took over the House and Senate? And do you remember how the Republicans took turns reading the Constitution into the record? Remember that? It was all a dumb show for the teabaggers and booger eaters. But when they came to this, it was funny. I remember remarking on it. When they came to the 3/5 clause, they didn't read it. There's only one problem. The 3/5 clause is technically still in the Constitution. Did you ever stop to think about that? Yes, the 13th Amendment ended chattel slavery and hereditary slavery. They're sort of the same thing. But nobody ever took the trouble to pass an amendment to excise the 3/5 clause from what? From the body of the Constitution. It is there to this day. One could actually argue that if the Republicans ever get there, if their deep and darkest nightmare fantasy dreams ever come true, and they get around to repealing the 13th Amendment, which I'm sure many of them would like to do, well, the 3/5 clause will still be there to go into operation, to count each enslaved person as 3/5 of a human being. And so Anyway, out in Nevada, they've got a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor. And the Democratic legislature passed a bill giving, like I said, Nevada's electoral college votes to whomever wins the popular vote. And Governor Steve Sisolak vetoed it. Now, as it stands, there are only 189 electoral votes pledged so far, and the interstate compact, such as it is, only kicks in if enough states do it to come to 270 electoral college votes. Now, why would Steve Sisolak, ostensibly a Democrat, do something like that? Well, he said that the pact itself could diminish the role of smaller states like Nevada in national electoral contests and force Nevada's electors to side with whoever wins the nationwide popular vote rather than the candidate Nevadans choose. In other words, he'd be perfectly okay with another Republican becoming president through operation of an anachronistic relic of our slavery past. And he seems to think it would diminish Nevada's importance in the grand scheme of things. As it is, though, given the fact that 50% of the United States population is in nine states, well, the rest of the country, like me, where the other half of the country is, those 41 states, well, they exercise a hell of a lot more power right now under the Electoral College system as it operates or dysfunctions, as it turns out. So, you know, thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Yeah. And Nevada has six electoral votes, one more than West Virginia, but somehow gets itself considered to be a swing state, while a state like West Virginia is meh. Of course, for a long, long time, West Virginia, up until the 2000 election, was reliably Democratic. And then in 2000, the RNC sent out mailers here, and the mailers had a knife being stuck through a Bible on them, and they said that Al Gore was going to come to West Virginia personally and take away everybody's Bibles and everybody's guns. And then they sent Charlton Heston here, and he stood in the Civic Center, such as it is, the Armory, there in Beckley, and said, "Get your hands off my guns, you damn dirty Democrats." And this state, for the first time in a long time, went for a Republican presidential candidate. And that was the beginning of the slide into perdition of this poor, benighted state. Yeah. So there's that. Oh, and congratulations to the members of our community in Ohio. The maggots there, purveyors of bad government, haters of welfare, have found themselves some welfare that they like. Yes. HB6 passed the Ohio State House of Representatives yesterday with Democrat and Republican votes by a tally of 53 to 43. What does HB6 do? HB6 is welfare for the coal and nuclear energy industries. It goes to the Senate. If the Ohio Senate approves it, which they probably will, it will then go to the desk of the governor of Ohio, who has already said he's just itching to sign it into law. That bill will create a $300 million welfare program for two rotten nuclear power plants and two toxic coal-fired steam plants. And there will be some property tax giveaways for the nuke plants. And they were already slated for closure because of their limited life cycle. About 1,400 people have jobs there. So under HB 6, Ohioans are going to be paying $1 a month for a clean air tax. It'll generate about $190 million a year. And it also gives permission to the Ohio Valley Electric Corporation to stick rate-paying customers with $2.50 a month to provide welfare for coal-fired power plants in Ohio and Indiana. And also tucked away in this pernicious little bill is the ability of citizens in Ohio to file objections and contests to wind projects that get approved. No, really. They want, and when we say residents, we mean Republicans, maggots, I guess, who don't want to get hair cancer from the wind turbines like their God Emperor says happens. Jamie Callender is a Republican from Ohio, a sponsor of HB6, and says, this bill saves jobs. Well, it also continues to not save lives. Tens of thousands of people die all over the country from airborne particulates every year. Some of those are in Ohio. I remember, way back when the 16-year-old son of beloved former Bengals running back Icky Woods collapsed and died on the football field from an asthma attack. Well, he didn't die on the football field. He died in the hospital, but I don't think he ever regained consciousness. But these Republicans want to get rid of clean energy requirements that were passed in 2008. Those required 12.5% of power for power come from renewable sources by 2027. They also got the energy efficiency standard for the state of Ohio. Yeah. So congratulations, Ohioans. What in the... You know, one of these days, I've got to figure out why it is that Ohio is so godforsaken Republican. Why does Ohio want such bad government all the star-spangled time? Is it another one of those cases of a few dirt farmers thinking that they're somehow or another Republicans? Is it all gerrymandering? I mean, we had the abortion bill, and now this. They want to save the fetuses, but then they want the fetuses to breathe poisoned coal particulates once they're born. Is it just a Midwestern version of Alabama? It, Is that what Ohio is? I mean, my experience with Ohio is considerably limited. But damn, really? Because these are, you know, these are people who are sent to do their wickedness by folks in, you know, little communities, and somehow, and you know, and if you want to be the president, you got to win Ohio as a Republican. I got nothing. But it's a larger inquiry. How is it that you can have enlightened states and then have states that are so absolutely the reverse? How is it you can have a California and an Ohio, an Oregon and an Indiana, a Washington and a Missouri? How does one nation have a Vermont and a Mississippi? Or a Massachusetts and an Alabama? I wish I had some answers. I truly do. But I don't. I just don't. Oh, and this is one of those hockey puck things. And what's that? Randy in PA says, the country I come from is called the Midwest. Ohio. Yeah. But the funny thing is, so many of these states once had progressive movements. Were in fact the birthing grounds for many of them. No more. I mean, going back to Ohio, there was a bit of sleaze involved with that bill. One of the senior advisors for Nitwit Nero's reelection campaign got on the phone and leaned on at least five Republican members of the Ohio House in advance of the vote on HB6. That's Bob Paduchik, Paduchik. He said if Ohio's coal plants and nuke plants shut down, that would hurt the chlamydia Claudius in his reelection bid there. Of course, Bob Paduchik said he was doing that on his own dime and not as a representative of the president. Of course not. No. Speaking to Cleveland.com, he said, "Honestly, I think diversity in electricity generation is a strength in this nation, and I'm concerned that we lose that in Ohio if we shut down these two plants." Oh, shut the fuck. Because we all know what would replace those two coal plants. It would be a frack gas plant. Which is no bonus. Maybe less particulates than the coal-fired plants. But we're gouging a great hole in the ground all the way through West Virginia to take frack gas to the eastern seaboard. Because we're going to, someday we hope, I don't, but the people like Jim Justice, the governor of the state, do, and the Republicans, hope to sell that gas to China. China. Darris with a note reminding me federal judges have tossed out Ohio's congressional map as illegal gerrymandering. One hopes that sticks. Um, Ron in Raleigh says, yeah, the people in Ohio think that they're being served by Republicans. People believe some unbelievable shit. My mechanic today told me that Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines was a socialist. No, really. If you can believe something as outrageous as that, you can believe anything. As for the Electoral College and the Three-Fifths Clause, Ron and Raleigh says, well, hell, they want that sucker in there in case they want to use it again. Also, slavery's still in there as well for punishment purposes. Right. Involuntary servitude upon conviction of a crime. Now, our buddy Steve in New York is a native Ohioan. So he's got a take on this. Why is Ohio Republican? Here's what I think. When I would drive from D.C. or New York to Ohio, I'd have to traverse a large part of the state. What I noticed is a state that is mostly depressed, dreary, and downtrodden. Most of the industry has left, and with it, the good union jobs. For instance, there was a Delco factory north of Dayton. It's now a huge racetrack. Chevy used to make its S10 trucks in Dayton, no more. NCR was in Dayton, no more. In Toledo, Youngstown, and Lordstown, industries just left, leaving the people there, as President Obama said, retreating to their guns and their Bibles. They have no certainty to hold on to in the secular realm, so they hold on to some semblance of certainty rooted in the spiritual. When there's so much despair surrounding people and the requisite lack of hope or certainty for the future, this is what you get. Mm-hmm. So, you know, breathe some coal dust. It'll be good for you. Jesus. But let's not leave our friends in the fracking industry out of this, shall we? Over at the United States Department of Energy, let's see, that would be run by Rick Perry of... that peculiarly named ranch in Texas. The Department of Energy, remember Freedom Fries and Freedom Toast? Yeah, they're at it. Well, we're back at it again. They're rebranding hydrocarbons. This past Tuesday, the Department of Energy put out a statement of sorts, a press release. It was boring, sort of de rigueur. It was about expanding a liquefied natural gas terminal on Quintana Island, Texas, Freeport. And really... kind of, you know, not a lot of there, until a couple of enterprising journalists noticed some interesting and, dare we say, Orwellian phraseology. Namely, the fact that the Energy Department has declared that we are engaging in energy dominance. And then referred to liquefied natural gas as, wait for it, molecules of U.S. freedom. The press release had a quote from Assistant Secretary for Fossil Energy Steve Weinberg. And Steve said, "With the U.S. in another year of record-setting natural gas production, I am pleased that the Department of Energy is doing what it can to promote an efficient regulatory system that allows for molecules of U.S. freedom to be exported to the world." Funny. I always heard that natural gas was a pollutant and toxic and highly explosive. I mean, I you know, when your natural gas blows up there, I guess that's a sort of freedom. You know, you're free of all of your earthly cares forevermore. Then there's Under Secretary of Energy Mark W. Menezes, who called natural gas freedom gas. "Increasing export capacity from the Freeport LNG project is critical to spreading freedom gas throughout the world by giving America's allies a diverse and affordable source of clean energy." Freedom gas. I'm going to try that next time I make a big pot of brown beans here. Oh, no, that's freedom gas. It's, God knows, equally applicable, isn't it? Yeah. Slate did some digging around and found that it all does go back to Rick Perry from that peculiarly named ranch in Texas. He signed an order earlier in the year doubling the amount of LNG exports to Europe. Quote, "The United States is again delivering a form of freedom to the European continent, and rather than in the form of young American soldiers, it's in the form of liquefied natural gas." And some reporter who was there said, "Well, should we call it freedom gas?" And Rick Perry, his big brain, said, "I think you may be correct in your observation." Jesus. Well, we can't export no wind. How are you supposed to make any money on it? Damn it. Sure. Why not? Brother Deacon Asa says, "Seriously? The Assistant Secretary of Fossil Fuels is called Steve Weinberg. You reading from The Onion, or is that the Beaverton?" No, that's real live, honest to God reporting. Yeah, Win, not Wind, but Weinberg, Brother Deacon Asa. Yeah. Going back to the question of weird states versus normal states, Todd points out, it may have to do with the Electoral College, key voting counties, former slave versus free states, Bloody Kansas and such. There's research correlating these commonalities. No joke, someone studied this. Back in the day, counties had much more leeway to govern as they wished. Consider, for instance, wet versus dry counties. Could be. Could be. The problem is, you know, getting out of a mess like that. Oh, and going back to yesterday's statement by Robert Mueller, of course, the maggots have been in a full-on tizzy for the last 24 hours since that news broke. So somebody who books guests over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda got on the blower to California's Republican House member Tom McClintock, who promptly expressed his outrage with what, I mean, apparently he at least understands what it was that Robert Mueller sort of tried to say yesterday. I mean, it's sort of like you're sitting at a table and you say, and let's say your server is Robert Mueller, and you say, by the way, are there any cockroaches in the pancake batter? And server Robert Mueller says, I am prevented by a department guidance from telling you that there are cockroaches in the pancake batter. But if I had evidence that there were no cockroaches in the pancake batter, I would certainly tell you that. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, this Tom McClintic guy has been getting airtime. I don't understand why. But here he is talking to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And by God, he wants a piece of Robert Mueller.
Lindsey Graham looking at it. So the other shoe's about to fall on this, and I think it's going to be devastating to the Democrats.
You know, Congressman McClintock, I'm so happy to have you on the program because this burning question was going on for me yesterday, and that is just simply this. If, in fact, you change the rules or change the law, and we no longer have an independent counsel, we have a special counsel, is it time to revisit that look? When you have a situation where you didn't get a thumbs up or thumbs down necessarily on some of the issues, but what you got was toss it over to Congress.
Well, and I reject the premise that Mueller put forward that he could not recommend prosecution because a sitting president cannot be indicted. Well, that's horse manure.
Well, that's nice to hear. And of course, if there's ever another Democratic president, Tom McClintock will be out there howling for indictment and then impeachment. Just a little gentle reminder. We'll never get to know, unless it's going on, say, in an alternate universe. But had Hillary Clinton won the presidency, I had predicted, had the Republicans maintained control of the House, which they did in 2016, you might note that I had predicted that there would be a select committee on impeachment impaneled on, like, January the 21st, 2017. At least McClintock recognizes that the DOJ guidance is bullshit. Or, as he said, manure. But he's only recognizing that because no one indicted Donald Trump. Had Donald Trump been indicted, he would be howling to the rafters that you cannot indict a sitting president of the United States.
Any president can be indicted after they leave office. We paid Robert Mueller and his team $25 million and gave them 22 months to make a case against the president, and they didn't because they couldn't.
That's what he says, but it's not what the report says. As noted, Mueller said that from jump, they were never going to indict the president because he felt that as a Department of Justice employee and under the purview of the Attorney General or the Acting Attorney General, he was forbidden from indicting him. The closest you can get is the reference by the Southern District of New York to Trump as Individual One in the Michael Cohen information, please. Arnold points out Hillary would have been impeached for not paying for a movie 40 years ago. Jack in Shreveport, subject line right-wing tizzy. Here's a word suggestion for old white men in a tizzy. Similarly to how they jab at women with the word hysteria, let's call them out with the word, and I like this, wait a minute, testeria, a sort of testosterone-driven penis hysteria, Testeria. That's T-E-S-T-E-R-I-A. Well played, Jack. Well played. Good neologism there. Ron and Raleigh, LNG to Europe? Are we trying to undercut Russia's sales to LNG to European countries? We are continuing to subsidize fossil fuels to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. This country is on a treadmill running backwards as fast as we can. Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Lee in New York. Freedom gas? Because freedom isn't free? Well, the freedom gas damn sure isn't. Exporting freedom, Jack in Shreveport says, since the right-wingers seem to go with the concept of a zero-sum game, doesn't exporting freedom out to the rest of the world mean we get less freedom here? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, it means exactly that. It's the same thing with coal. You know, a lot of the coal that we are exporting out of blasted mountains and whatnot is what is called metallurgical coal. That means it's really good for making steel. And, of course, Julius Geiser says he wants to reinvigorate the steel industry. But if you want to reinvigorate the American steel industry, you kind of need some to keep your metallurgical coal at home so that you know, they have what they need to become the massive industry that they once were, and by the way, are never going to be again, but you know, who's counting? All right, but back to asshole Tom McClintock, who, remember, wants a piece of Robert Mueller.
And now he's trying to hide behind this pettifoggery of DOJ regulations. I find it disgusting, and it reinforces my position. He needs to come before the Congress and answer for his conduct.
Oh, good. Maybe the internet can go wild over Tom McClintock calling for Mueller to appear before Congress the way that people are going wild and you know, having conniptions over Justin Amash's little dumb show. Steve in New York asks, subject line, the OLC rule. Doesn't McClintock realize it was a GOP administration who gave us this? If they would have indicted Trump, then this cockknocker would be citing the OLC rule. Exactly. But I'm with him. I want it. You know what? If Robert Mueller says he'll just read the report if he's called to testify, then by God, let's set aside enough time for him to read the report. I want him to read the report. I want him to read the footnotes. I want him to read the endnotes. Every blessed word of it. And have the American people hear him do it. And when he's questioned by members of the House Judiciary Committee, if he wants to make reference to a specific passage from the report, then read it again. Read it until the American people get it. Sometimes you have to explain a thing two or three times to get it through to some Merkin citizens. So that'd be just fine by me. Absolutely. Not a problem. I mean, is there a downside to it? Now, that's just not nice, Trey. Trey in Kentucky says, Ohio, the armpit of America. Trey's in Kentucky, so you get the idea. He wants to, oh, well, Bob Mueller's got to answer for what...
So you don't think the whole notion of special counsel is broken. You just say that in this one, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in this particular instance, you need to hear from this former special counsel because he's quit, so we know he's
former. I don't like the idea of any official who is accountable to no one, and that is essentially the special counsel. So I'm not.
You see, that's a lie, too. Republicans lie so much. You've got to really pay attention to keep up. But that's a lie. He was specifically accountable to the Attorney General of the United States, and specifically accountable in the recusal of the Attorney General to the Deputy AG. That being accountable to someone in a chain of command is sort of the direct opposite of being accountable to no one. Thorns in the side.
Really comfortable with that to begin with, but what I'm very uncomfortable about is Robert Mueller's conduct in that position, and now taking the stand that he's not going to take questions from the press, he's not going to take questions from the Congress, he's above all that. Well, I'm sorry, that's not the way this process works.
Good for you, Tom. You towering intellect, you. So you'll be voting alongside the Democrats in voting for a subpoena for Bob Mueller. You'll be doing that. You've got permission from Kevin McCarthy to do that, do you? Well, good for you, Tom McClintock. Good for you. I'm just damn proud for you. What a man. What a merkin. What a patriot. No. Mm-mm. But there are, there are maggots in the Congress, and there are maggots who used to be in the Congress. And when you've got a used to be in the Congress maggot, they get a tasty little job as an analyst over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And that's the case with Trey Gowdy. You remember Trey Gowdy. The guy who looks like he's made of wax, who was hopelessly humiliated by Hillary Clinton over the course of 11 hours of testimony, in which she pretty much tore his ass off and held it out and said, "Is this you? Is this yours?" and handed him his own ass. Yeah, yesterday they got him over onto Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to ask him about Mueller's statement. And, well, golly, he certainly hasn't gotten any smarter.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller gave his first public statement on the conclusion of the Russia investigation. The report finding there was not enough evidence to prove conspiracy, but prosecutors could not exonerate President Trump on obstruction. Let's bring in Trey Gowdy, former House Oversight Committee Chairman and Fox News contributor.
You know, that was surprisingly almost an honest statement the Fox blonde just made. Not entirely, but close.
I wanted to talk a couple of angles with you. One, it's very interesting in a special counsel's report to have insufficient evidence versus no evidence, right? So, but if you don't have a case, you, as prosecutors, sometimes you have to let it go.
Of course, he didn't say he didn't have a case. There's a big difference between insufficient evidence to bring a criminal prosecution and insufficient evidence to bring a bill of impeachment. Different standards of proof. But beyond that, well, let's hear from the idiot.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of evidentiary thresholds. I mean, it takes probable cause to indict someone or arrest them, but it takes beyond a reasonable doubt to get a conviction. And most prosecutors, if you don't have a realistic likelihood of a successful outcome, you're not going to try the case. So you can have probable cause. You could get an indictment. You could get an arrest warrant, but you got no chance of winning. I don't know where this falls in the evidentiary. I think it's above no evidence, but whether or not it's enough to have indicted, look, I listened to every word of his press conference. I still don't know whether or not he would have indicted but for that OLC opinion.
The funny thing is that he said that he couldn't even think about indicting him because of the OLC guidance. So it's kind of natural that waxy Trey Gowdy would not know.
Yeah, not
and what
DOJ.
Do you make of that discrepancy people are pointing to between what Bill Barr had said that Mueller told him and what Mueller said today, that that was the stumbling block for him on obstruction?
I'm still not clear whether that, I don't know what, this is one of the president's options, and I'm not his lawyer, I'm not ever going to be his lawyer, but, you know, you can waive any right you have, Dana. You have the right to remain silent, but you can talk to the police if you want to. You have a right to a jury trial, but you can plead guilty if you want to. I'll bet the president has the right to say, go ahead, indict me. If you have enough, the Supreme Court's never said that I can't be indicted. This is DOJ. I'm the head of DOJ. I run the executive branch. If you have enough to indict me, go ahead and do it. At least you'll have some clarity. What you're going to have now for the next 14 months is an impeachment investigation by folks who have already made up their mind. I mean, 60 of them wanted to impeach him before Mueller wrote a single syllable of his report.
Yeah, and why was that? Why did 60 people want to indict him before Mueller wrote a single sentence of his report? Well, that's because evidence was being developed along the way, parallel to Mueller's investigation in Congress. They also may have wanted to indict him on, say, violations of the Emoluments Clause, which would clearly be an indictable offense, and which he has been violating since his hand came off the Bible on January the 20th, 2017.
The jury's never going to convict him. So we're going to be in this state of chaos for the next 14 months. Look, I don't think that there's a prosecutable case for obstruction. I don't know everything, but from what I've seen, firing Jim Comey is not obstruction of justice.
If it is for purposes of taking the heat off the Russian investigation, yes, it fucking is. It is abundantly clear that obstruction of justice can be had by a president taking actions that legally he can take, but in which the intent is to specifically obstruct a lawful investigation. You know what's funny? Trey Gowdy used to be a prosecutor. He knows all this. But you can't say that to the Rubes and the Fox Blonde over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, because then the check won't clear no more.
So if the president has the right to waive his right to remain silent, does he also have the right to waive his right to not be indicted while president? I'd take my chances with 12 reasonable-minded fellow citizens before I would the House Democrats.
Take a listen to Chairman Jerry Nadler of the House Judiciary Committee earlier, just in this.
Oh, for pity's sakes. Enough of this fool. How can you waive a right that the Department of Justice says doesn't exist? But of course, you know, when you're on Fox, you're speaking to an audience of one. Today, in front of the helicopter, he said, and it was pure mob speak. He said, they got nothing. They got nothing. I mean, that is literally a line out of The Untouchables, in which Robert De Niro played Al Capone. I'm almost certain of it. I remember sitting there watching the movie in the fabulous Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm pretty sure that somewhere along the way, Robert De Niro says, they got nothing. They got nothing! Or one of the thugs does. So, they got nothing is almost like a precedent statement to say, bring it on. So stay tuned. Watch the crazy play out. Jesus. Well, here we are at the top of the hour. Hey, thank you. I'm not doing any fundraising this evening. But thank you to Jack in Shreveport. Thank you so very much. That is helpful indeed as we move toward the end of the month. Thank you very kindly, Jack. Let's take a quick break for the Green News Report. Shall we? Do let's. I'm not going anywhere. Don't you either.
It's Thursday, May 30, 2019.
Again, the National Weather Service saying this is a life-threatening situation and the media should be using the strongest language possible.
Deadly, relentless storms tapering off, for now, after hammering Midwest. Mississippi River flooding now longest lasting in over 90 years. Two congressional Republicans block disaster relief bill. Plus,
if we don't take action now, it's going to be extremely out of our control.
Climate strike protests help propel climate candidates into EU Parliament.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I was just checking social media. We have viewers complaining already. Just go back to the show. No, we're not going back to the show, folks. This is a dangerous situation, okay?
Okay, but The Bachelorette is on. Jamie Simpson, meteorologist of Fox 45 in Dayton, Ohio. I know there's a huge tornado outside, but The Bachelorette. This is your Green News Report.
I'm done with you people. I really am. This is pathetic.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I think we sort of have some good news in that these unceasing storms and tornadoes may be pausing for a few days?
Maybe. That's according to the National Weather Service that says the weary Midwest may soon catch that break from the relentless hammering of deadly destructive storms of the last several weeks. The month of May has been one of the most active periods for tornadoes in U.S. history. More than 500 tornadoes were reported over the last 30 days, with a new record of at least 8 tornadoes per day for 12 days straight.
There have been more than 500 reported tornadoes?
Yes.
Wow.
The highest one-day total was 68 tornadoes. So far this year, tornadoes have been blamed for at least 38 deaths in the United States. But the flooding caused by record rainfall this spring is not going away yet in Kansas, Oklahoma, or Arkansas, and it may not fully recede until July. On the Weather Channel, National Weather Service hydrologist Bill Lawrence compared the torrential rainfall in Kansas to Hurricane Harvey.
Their normal average rainfall in the city of Wichita is 32 Jeez. Inches and some change. So that's 76% of an annual rainfall in 1 month. Now, this is not Harvey, but it's as close as we get to Harvey in this part of the country.
Flooding along the Mississippi River this year has lasted so long, it is now the second longest since the Great Flood of 1927.
I'm almost speechless here. I have no idea when people are going to figure out that we are facing a serious crisis.
And people are asking about the influence of climate change. Now, scientists have confirmed that heavy rainfall from storms has increased by as much as 70% in some areas of the United States since the 1950s. And they say it will only get worse in the coming years thanks to man-made global warming. Now, the influence on tornadoes is harder to pin down due to a lack of historical data, but there is a trend toward more frequent tornado swarms with more tornadoes per outbreak. One study found that since 1950, the number of days seeing at least 32 tornadoes has more than doubled.
Yeah, but the good news is the Donald Trump Department of Energy is now referring to liquid natural gas as freedom gas.
So there's that.
Yep.
The months of extreme storms, floods, and tornadoes have cost farm country billions of dollars in losses and a delayed planting season for many of America's farmers.
You mean those Trump voters in farmland?
Yes. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced this week that farmers have planted less than 50% of their intended corn crop for 2019 and less than 20% of their intended soy crops. If they plant too late, they will miss the deadline to qualify for federal crop insurance.
Well, maybe they'll get lucky and they'll find freedom gas under their farms.
However, victims of these storms will have to wait longer for help because two congressional Republicans have thwarted a $19 billion bipartisan disaster relief funding bill in the U.S. House that had already passed the Senate and won White House approval. Republicans Chip Roy of Texas and Thomas Massie of Kentucky demanded that the vote be held after members return from their holiday recess next week. That delay means that disaster victims across the nation who have been hit by devastating hurricanes, wildfires and floods would have to wait at least another month for assistance.
No rush. Puerto Rico has waited 2 years as is, so what's the hurry?
Finally, there is some good news in Europe. On Friday, May 24th, more than a million people around the world rallied their governments to act on climate change, part of the latest students' climate strike that occurred right before voting began in elections for the European Parliament. The students' climate strike movement appears to have had an impact on the election, with climate change a major factor in the campaigns. Plus, a surge of young voters and their parents propelled Europe's Green Party to modest but widespread gains in the EU Parliament, where they'll now have greater influence on environmental policy than ever before.
Well, that's good news for Europe. It'll be interesting to see if these relentless storms in the U.S. end up having an effect on our election in 2020.
Indeed.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I hate to be needy, selfish and greedy, but please pay attention to me.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, thanks to, thanks very kindly to the Ad Hoc Research Committee here in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Thanks go out to Flavio and to Lee and to Sparky and to Scott in San Diego. Yeah, I was not misremembering.
Al Capone.
We have no Mr. Capone.
Get him.
We have no Mr. Capone.
I said.
Yep. God, those Armani suits.
Something you want here?
My friend was killed today.
I don't care.
You don't care. Hey, now he does. Come out here, Capone. You want to fight? You want to fight you and me right here? That's it. Come on. Somebody, you afraid to come out from behind your men? You afraid to stand up for yourself?
You want to do it now?
No.
You want to
yeah.
go to mat now?
Come on, you can't, son of a bitch.
What?
Easy.
You talk to me like that in front of my son?
Easy.
Fuck you and your family.
Easy.
Fuck.
Easy.
It's me. It's me. It's me. Not this way. Not this way.
You fuck, you got nothing.
Not a lot of talk in the bed. You're here because you got nothing. You got nothing in court. You don't got the bookkeeper. You got nothing. Nothing. And if you were a man, you would have done it now. You don't got a thing,
yes.
You punk.
What makes me think that Geezer Disgustus has seen that? You got nothing. Yeah. But, well, then there's, you know, he himself. For instance, consider how he got asked about the I word. No, not imbecile. Impeachment today. Yeah.
You think they're going to impeach you?
I don't see how they can. Because they're possibly allowed, although I can't imagine the courts allowing it.
Really? He's going to sue the House of Representatives to keep him from impeaching him. The courts.
I've never gotten into it. I never thought that would even be possible to be using that word. To me, it's a dirty word, the word impeach. It's a dirty, filthy, disgusting word. And it had nothing to do with me. So I don't think so, because there was no crime. You know, it's high crimes. And not with or. It's high crimes and misdemeanors.
Wait, so that's another one of the... Oh, the spirochetes are falling down on their job. So he's essentially saying, sure, I committed high crimes, but where's the misdemeanors? No, we're... yeah.
So, because there was no crime, you know, it's high crimes and, not with or, it's high crimes and misdemeanors. There was no high crime and there was no misdemeanor.
Sure.
So how do you impeach based on that? And it came out that...
You know, the Clementine Caligula really does need to spend a little time listening to Dr. Bill. He might understand what that phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, actually means and why the framers included it in the impeachment clause. Oh, well, then again, he's never been a big one for learning things.
That there was nothing to do with Russia. The whole thing is a scam. It's one of it's a giant presidential harassment. And honestly, I hope it goes down as one of my greatest achievements because I've exposed corruption. I've exposed corruption like nobody knew existed.
Sure you have, Julius Caesar. It was also, it was interesting insofar as this is reason to be disturbed. This is reason to be worried. Because he's assigning himself dictatorial powers.
That's wrong. Now, because he said it differently the first time. So he said, essentially, you're innocent. I'm innocent of all charges. And you know the thing that nobody brings up? There was no crime. They're saying he's obstructing something and there was no crime. And nobody brings it up. Also, someday you ought to read a thing called Article 2. Read Article 2.
Of what?
Which gives the president powers that you wouldn't believe. But I don't even have to rely on Article 2. There was no crime, there was no obstruction, there was no collusion, there was no nothing. And this is from a group of people that hate me. If they only found anything, they would have had it. And he knows that better than anybody.
Innocent, he said he didn't.
There was no crime, there was no charge because he had no information.
Because he had no information. That's kind of a confession that he tried to keep information from reaching Mueller. But it's pretty clear the depth of his hatred for anyone who would look into his filthy business.
I think he is a total conflicted person. I think Mueller is a true never-Trumper. He's somebody that dislikes Donald Trump. He's somebody that didn't get a job that he requested, that he wanted very badly, and then he was appointed. And despite that, and despite $40 million, 18 Trump haters, including people that work for Hillary Clinton and some of the worst human beings on earth, they got nothing. It's pretty amazing.
They got nothing. There you go. Oh, and by the way, some of the worst human beings on Earth. Let's check in with worst human beings on Earth. How about the aforementioned Duterte? He's a pretty worst human being on Earth, wouldn't you say? Or Vlad Putin. He's a pretty horrible human being. But no, the people who simply investigated the filthy things that he does, those are the worst human beings on Earth. How about old Mohammed bin Bonesaw, his buddy, over there in Saudi Arabia, who orders the summary execution of journalists? Nope, not one of the worst human beings on Earth. That would be the people who worked for the special counsel's office. Yeah. How about anybody who is engaging, any Saudis or UAE folks who are engaging in the slaughter of Yemenis. Nope. Not the worst human beings on earth. That's reserved for people who investigate Donald Trump's crooked, misbegotten, misspent existence on this planet. Jesus. I wish I could say it was shocking, but it isn't. And then finally, the story that that we mentioned last night on the front porch.
It is fair.
Hold on. That's me talking to me. About the hiding of the USS John McCain, the guided missile frigate. That was first reported by the Wall Street Journal. It's been subsequently reported by other outlets. So naturally, he was asked about it today. Well, our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky provided me the article from Mother Jones. Trump says he knew nothing about the John McCain stuff. The Secretary of the Navy says, no, not me. Well, Kevin Drum over at Mother Jones has gotten hold of an email. President Trump says he knew nothing about this. The Secretary of Defense says he knew nothing about it either. Kevin Drum says, I believe them. This was cooked up by Trump aides in the White House who were worried that Trump might have a sudden meltdown if he saw the McCain in port. Kevin Drum adds, just think about that. Trump's staff lives in such terror of their man-child that they were afraid he might explode during a military review if he happened to catch sight of the words USS John McCain on the side of a naval vessel. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your commander-in-chief. Here's the email. Please see below excerpt from discussions between WHMO and C7F. Need all supporting units to understand the requirement for rehearsals. Hopefully the WASP can get there early enough. Also, please let me know the latest on the deck landing requirement. There is a lot of stray voltage out there right now about what is actually required. There is no expectation for the CH-47s to land on an LHD. My understanding is the HH-60 deck landing is somehow dependent on what the HMX-1 white tops can do on the KAGA, the Kaga. I don't know. Let me know when maybe the Kaga is a Japanese warship. Let me know when this is clarified with the WHMO team in Japan. Also, please confirm number 3 will be satisfied. There's a list here. 1. WASP needs to be in port NLT 24 May, 22 May desired for HMX rehearsal. If not, we need to keep the Reagan in port for the rehearsal and event. Can you imagine? They're ordering the deployment of United States naval vessels, vessels of war, that are over there for a purpose solely to satisfy the ego needs of the man baby in chief. 2. Need to use a landing area closer to the JS Kaga for the press heavy lift helo so they can get in place. Staff helicopter can land in the ball, in the ball field, but press helo needs to be closer. 3. USS John McCain needs to be out of sight. And so there's a vague chance he was actually telling the truth this morning about not knowing about the whole McCain kerfuffle.
It is fair. Do you think it's fair to the sailors of the John McCain that they were banned from hearing you speak simply because of
this? Yeah, I don't know what happened. I wasn't involved. I would not have done that. I was very angry with John McCain because he killed health care. I was not a big fan of John McCain in any way.
Time out. Because he killed health care. He doesn't even know what bill it was that John McCain voted down. He thinks that there was actually some sort of a health care bill being considered when there wasn't. It was simply a matter of getting rid of the Affordable Care Act and taking health care away from tens of millions of American citizens. And that was what John McCain said no to. Wow. Just wow. What he's upset about is that John McCain did not vote with him, period.
Way, shape, or form, I think John McCain had a lot to getting President Bush, a lot to do with it, to go into the Middle East, which was a catastrophe. To me, John McCain, I wasn't a fan, but I would never do a thing like that. Now, somebody did it because they thought I didn't like him, okay? And they were well-meaning, I will say. I didn't know anything about it. I would never have done that.
The Sailors, the McCain, an apology.
No, not at all. I heard Sailors all went on. We had a tremendous group of Sailors from various ships. It was a beautiful day. But the McCain thing, I knew nothing about.
So we go from Al Capone to Sergeant Schultz. I knew nothing. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, thank you. We've got a new member of the Patreon group. Thank you very kindly to Greg. Thanks, Greg, for becoming a patron over at Patreon. Thank you very kindly indeed. So from Julius Geezer, let's go to something a little bit more, a little bit less. No, not that either. Let's go to Bronxville, New York, Westchester County. Let's go to a private school there, a religious school. It's run by Village Lutheran Church in Bronxville. It's called the Chapel School. Mm-hmm. The state of New York has just completed an investigation of something that happened at the Chapel School. The announcement was made yesterday. The events happened in March. As a result of the event, the Chapel School has agreed to make its staff more diverse, as well as its student body. The Chapel School does pre-K through 8th grade. 43% of its student population are minorities. They're going to have to, Attorney General Letitia James will have to approve their hiring of a chief diversity officer. Why? Because of something that happened in 5th grade at the Chapel School. This is one of those thorns in the side where you... And remember, this isn't Alabama. This is Westchester County, New York. Where in the 5th grade... Anybody want to help me with these... what is it about 5th grade? Was it last week, week before, when we had the story of the little 5th grader who was disciplined for objecting to Nazi salutes in Murfreesboro, Tennessee? Yeah. Well, before that happened, well, maybe somewhat contemporaneously, you've apparently got a history unit in the 5th grade at the Chapel School there in Westchester County. And by way of... I have a hard time even saying it. This is difficult to express. Because it is so infuriating. Because it is so utterly, undeniably wrong. In 5th grade at the Chapel School, the student, the teacher there had a slave auction. No, no, really. Now, I remember being in college, and they would, and fraternities and sororities would do these kinds of things, you know, to raise money for charity. This wasn't that. No. She segregated the fifth grade students, the teacher did. And she had the white students bid on the black students. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. In the statement that Attorney General Letitia James issued, she said, every young person, regardless of race, deserves the chance to attend school free of harassment, bias, and discrimination. Lessons designed to separate children on the basis of race have no place in New York classrooms or in classrooms throughout this country. I thank the Chapel School for agreeing to take measures that directly address the issues of race, diversity, and inclusion at the school. This all happened because one mother, finding out about it, refused to be quiet. It wasn't just one. It wasn't just one fifth grade class. It was two. A teacher asked all of the African-American students to raise their hands and then instructed them to exit the classroom and stand in the hall. And then she put imaginary chains or shackles on the African-American students, on their necks, their wrists, and their ankles, and had them walk back into the classroom. There weren't any real shackles. Just pretend. Okay, just pretend that they're on your wrists and your ankles and your neck, okay? Walk like that. Then she had them line up against the wall. And then she auctioned them to the white children. The statement from Attorney General Letitia James said the investigation found that the teacher's reenactments in the two classes had a profoundly negative effect on all of the students present, especially the African-American students, and the school community at large. Following the reenactments, the school terminated the teacher's employment. So at least it has a happy ending. You gotta wonder where she's gonna go and teach fifth grade next. Holy crap. 2019. Now, here's a question, and I think it's a fair one. Kyle, I don't know. Kyle, typing in all caps, and Kyle doesn't do that. Very few of you type all caps to the program, and I appreciate that. But in this case, I understand. All caps. They had a mock fucking slave auction in fifth fucking grade. What has happened to my country? And that was the question I was about to ask. Would this be happening? And I guess it's entirely a rhetorical question, or can't result in anything but speculation, because none of us are Tralfamadorians. None of us are third stage guild navigators. Well, except Sparky. So we can't find out what would have happened on an alternate timeline. But would this have happened had Donald Trump not become president of the United States? I'm so old, I remember the hunting of the Kleenex. And I remember day after day after day, during that period of time where he was gobbling OxyContin like M&Ms and chewing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor, Flush Flimball would get on the air and scream, "My friends, my fellow Americans, what in the world do we tell the children now that we have a president who has sex in the Oval Office? How do we explain this to our children? This will be the destruction of our country if this man is not removed from office." Some of you may remember that too. Jesus, that junkie fulminated for months, if not years, in that vein. "I can't imagine what it must be like, my friends, to have a young child and have to explain to him or her what it was that that disgusting man, Bill Clinton, did in the Oval Office with Monica Lewinsky. But it's a little too convenient, isn't it, that you get the most openly racist president in 50 years, that we get a president who is a Nazi sympathizer, and the first one of those that I'm aware of, and that in places like Murfreesboro, Tennessee, you've got historical reenactments with a fifth grader, a fifth grade boy who was assigned, who was cast as Adolf Hitler. And in Westchester County, New York, not known as a hotbed of the goddamn Klan, you've got a fifth grade teacher conducting a slave auction of African American students. Help me, because I got nothing. Oh, there's that got nothing part again. I am willing to speculate that no, this would not be happening if Hillary Clinton were in the White House, because it would not have been normalized. And that's the bottom line. White supremacy, Nazism, fascism have all been normalized under the maladministration of this alleged president. How do you reach any other conclusion? I've been doing this for 15 years. And I can tell you anecdotally, that in those 15 years, I don't recall there being a steady drumbeat of stories like this every blessed damn day during the Bush administration, during the Obama administration. I don't remember this in the Clinton administration. I don't remember it in the first Bush administration. Yeah, I remember some of it in the Reagan administration. But back then we had to do things like read newspapers. But for a couple of years of the Reagan administration, I was sitting behind a computer terminal in Atlanta at CNN with every wire service in the world coming into our computers in the era, you know, before the internet became a thing. And so if there was news to be had, I was reading it on an almost daily basis. I remember writing, as Trump became president, that there were a lot of scared people in this country who damned well had a right to be scared. And every day we're finding out that those fears were well placed. Jesus. But like I said, it has a happy ending. The teacher got fired, and the school is going to try to make sure that this never happens again. But if I wanted to right now, I could just start and spend the rest of the program, we're a little over halfway done with it, doing nothing but these stories. That's how many of them there are. it's exhausting. It breaks one's heart if one, you know, if one has a conscience, and this community damn sure does. To see us, this country, enter into such a sickening spiral into the worst aspects, the most feverish swamps of our national nature. On the other hand, you have to document this shit, too. Let's run over to the phones. Let's check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey. So we got teachers. At least they fired her, because I'm still waiting to hear about the teachers that had the principal take a picture of them smiling with a noose out here, well, in Palmdale. So we're still waiting to hear about what's happening with them. And let's see. We had the white woman who followed an old black... You heard about that one, right?
Yeah.
The old black man.
And murdered him.
And murdered him. And they're trying to say it wasn't racially motivated. Okay, so, riddle me this, Batman. You witnessed a hit and run. Okay, and from what I understand, it was a minor physical business, and the older gentleman might have, now he hasn't even realized he hit anybody, right? You see this happening, and you proceed to follow the gentleman, and then after you follow him, you cut him off and block his car, and then you get out and shoot and kill him. But it wasn't racially motivated.
No, heck no. How do you make that determination? I'm sorry, I'm just kind of licked on this.
I don't get it. I mean, because when I first read the story, I thought that she was involved in the accident. Not that justifies somebody shooting somebody, if you have a fender bender. But the fact is, she wasn't even involved in the accident. She had nothing to do with it.
No.
And did you hear about the woman at the campground in Mississippi?
Pulled a gun. Pulled a gun.
Pulled a gun on the black people because they were having a picnic. Yeah, at least she got fired. She worked that way. I did KOA campground. And, pulled a gun on the people and they're like, yeah, you're not supposed to be here. Get out, whatever. And as you were saying earlier, I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember much of the Reagan administration, and then, because we didn't have the internet back then, so I don't remember any of this stuff really happening. The racist things that I remember about the Reagan administration are just horrible things, is the AIDS epidemic and the crack epidemic. Those are the only two things, that I personally remember, because both of those things affected me personally. So, yeah, but I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ. Every single blessed day, and sometimes two or three times a day. I mean, and these are just the things that are making the national news. Let that wrap around your brain for a minute. These are only the things that are actually making national news. So what's happening, more stuff is happening, it's just not being reported. Or it's being reported, but it hasn't made it out, to where you
or it, or, or it just out. It just sinks beneath the wave of the 15 microsecond news cycle.
Right. And yet and still, there's no such thing as racism, Bob.
Who was that Fox News guy back during the Reign of Error? He died of colon cancer.
Was it painful?
And he declared. He was the first one to publicly state that racism was officially over in the United States.
That bitch. Well, did you hear about what's happening out here in California, about the bill that was passed about, I mean, it's a start. It's not, you know, they kind of watered it down, but it's a start about what, you know, as far as what a cop can say is a justified, you know, police shooting. I bet the NRA is having a shit fit over that one.
Oh, very much so. Oh, okay. The dead fox guy, yeah, Tony Snow. Thanks, Scott. Yeah.
Racist. See, you know, we're white, because I gather, was this a white man that said this?
Tony Snow, yeah. Oh, yeah, very good. White.
Okay.
So, Snow White, if you will.
Yeah, Snow White. I love it when white people declare that racism is over, considering that they don't have to deal with racism. They don't have to deal with the impacts of racism. So they can say it's over because, of course, they don't feel the impact of racism because they're white. Unless you pull up this reverse racism bullshit. That I always love that argument, you know. But it's just, like, I think I told you about I have a really good friend who grew up, you know, in a small town in Texas. And, you know, he said that, you know, he went to integrated school and, you know, and it was really cool there. And he's like, I didn't witness any racism. I'm like, because you wouldn't. Not directed to you. I said, now I want you to go and talk to the people that you grew up with, the black folks in your town, and ask them, what was it like for them as black people growing up in a small town in Texas? You got to get a completely different take on it. And when I said that, I said, when he said, well, I didn't witness any racism, and I said, because you're white, baby, you won't. And he got it. He's like, oh shit, you're right. I'm like, yeah, it won't affect you. I mean, you might have witnessed the white racism that you weren't even, you know, and because of the way people in that part of the country, you might not have even realized that people were being racist because.
Well, here's one of those everyday stories.
Great!
It comes out of course, Louisiana. Well, I don't know why I say of course, because I just had a story about a slave auction in Westchester County, New York.
Yeah, I sent you that story. Yeah. I know, but see, like you said, well, remember we got the teachers with the smiling with the nooses out here in Palmdale, California.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was wrong. This isn't Louisiana. This is Elk Grove, California. I don't know where Elk Grove, California is.
I think it's in Northern California.
So, and it's over a parking spot. So. It's over a parking spot.
Uh-oh.
And it's a Latina teenager. And angry old white dude called the cops over a parking space. Stand by.
You're not going to fucking do this to U.S. citizens anymore.
What am I doing?
You're fucking taking a parking spot from a U.S. citizen.
I am a U.S. citizen.
No, you're not. Prove it.
Why would I prove it to you? What do I need to prove to you?
You don't have to prove it to me. You can prove it to the cops. To ICE.
Okay, I will then.
Okay, but I don't need to move.
Well, okay, you're disturbing me.
That doesn't matter.
Can you please leave?
No, because I'm in exactly the safe spot that an illegal immigrant would stand in, right? Right? Within this area. And we're not going to take you this anymore. So you need to take your fucking car and get the fuck out of here.
No.
Yes, you do.
No.
Yes. You park this car here again and I'm going to report you to the ICE.
Okay.
You get that?
Okay.
So move.
No.
Move.
No. No.
Move now.
No.
Move now.
Can you?
The cops are coming. I already called them.
I don't care.
Okay, the cops are coming. They're coming to talk to you.
Okay.
Got that?
The cop, because you are taking a parking space
from a U.S. citizen. The funny thing is,
a U.S. citizen.
The funny thing is, the guy is probably. I mean, did you hear his speech patterns?
Sounds like he was drunk to be there, Bob.
Well, he might have been, but he's probably not much lighter than what the teenage girl is.
Yeah.
So it's boiling. It's boiling into Jesus Christ.
It's getting. I don't know if I ever told you.
When she pulled up, he asked her if she was his she was his Uber. And
wait
that's
a minute. What about the Uber? Wait, hold up.
When
his
she
Uber?
Yeah, when she pulled up, he asked her, was she his Uber? She said she wasn't.
Oh, okay.
So then he started going after her in this racist tirade.
So wait a minute. He wasn't even driving. He was waiting to be picked up. So why was he so concerned about a parking space?
You tell
did
me.
Did I miss something?
No,
did
that's
I,
no. You.
Did I fucking miss something?
No, that this is America. You know, every now and then I see people on social media saying, "Oh, I thought our country was better than this." Well, shame on you. We're not, and we never have been.
Never have been.
So.
Never fucking have been. I'm still wrapping my head around this shit. So he's yelling at her. He's waiting. So first he thought she was his Uber driver. Okay, no, sir, I'm not. She proceeds to park in the parking space. And then he goes off on her because she's parking in the parking space and taking it away from a United States citizen, and there was nobody trying to park in the first place.
I mean, is parking that tough in California, Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, it's bad, but when you said they were, you know, he got into it with her over a parking space, I thought he was trying to park. I've never heard.
No, he's just he's just standing outside her car, yakking into her window. Now, what I don't understand. What I don't understand is why she didn't.
My head is spinning on that one.
She said, "You're scaring me." Why didn't she start screaming, "Help! Help! Help!"
I would have been yelling, "Help!" and get the fuck away from me, and just like, you know, I would have walked away. I would have went off for a minute, and then I would have walked away. You know, and just kept it moving. And if he had to follow me, then I would have just. I'm like. I would have been calling 911. I would have been on the phone with 911 like, I'm being harassed by a crazy old white man. Please come and he threatened me.
But then again, do you remember the clip from, I think it was the Chicago area, where the cops showed up and the crazy old drunk white guy was harassing the African-American family that were setting up for a cookout?
Oh yeah, and then see, it's just, you know,
let the guy run off at the mouth forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
Before he finally sort of gently encouraged him to go away.
And see, this is the problem when we call the cops, black people, Hispanic people.
Well, and that's probably why she didn't call the cops.
Because it's a catch-22. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
Because cops liable to show up and shoot her.
Shoot her, because she was scaring the old white guy. And it's getting to that point, well, like the brother up in Boulder, Colorado, you heard about that one. you know, the cop that was, did you hear about that one?
Help me.
So there's a brother up in Boulder, Colorado. He's, you know those pickup, the things that people use to pick up trash, not the one with the spike at the end, but the clippy one.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's walking around his building. I thought I sent you this story. I'm surprised I didn't. He's walking around his apartment building. Yeah, I did a while back. He's sitting around.
Oh, yeah.
Picking up the trash around his apartment building. Now, there was no call about trespassing or anything like that because he wasn't. So the white cop comes up and, you know, do you live, you know, what are you doing? Now, he's picking up, first of all, he's picking up trash, okay, around his building. So what's the problem? But, you know, white cop, black man. So, you know, of course, the cop is like, I need to see your ID. What are you doing? The brother shows him his ID. Now, granted, it's a school ID, but it's still his identification. And he's like, then the cop proceeds to yell at him and tell him to sit down. And the brother's like, no. And he gets to that, he starts yelling at the cop, you know, because it's going back and forth. Because the cop's like, well, put that, you have a weapon. And he's like, I don't have a weapon. I'm just picking up fucking trash. This goes on for, I think, like 20 minutes, Bob. And he's yelling back
and forth.
Oh, no,
I saw that. Yeah, I saw the video.
And he threatens to tase the brother. And the brother's like, I am not sitting down. I am not. And then, of course, he calls for backup. The cop does. And now there's all these cops surrounding this young man because, you know, I mean, granted, I'm wishing that the brother had, I'm just thankful to God that nothing happened to him. But I understand his frustration.
Well, hell yeah.
Because finally, a cop goes into the building and a white woman is standing there. And he's like, does he live here? And the white woman's like, you know, and she's upset because she's witnessing this. And she's like, yes, he lives here. And it's like, okay. And so then the cop's like, well, we'll just walk away from this, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Now, so he was about to get fired, but because he quit before he could get fired. And, of course, now he's entitled to $70,000 in, like, you know, vacation pay and, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know.
And since he quit, he can go and be a cop somewhere else.
Exactly. He quit before there was any action taken. There's a level of frustration, and I've had this frustration. I've always had the frustration, but it has been heightened. Since what's his name has gotten into office, it has, I was sitting at the gas station not long after what's his name got elected. And I was at the pump and I got back in my car because my car was, you know, almost on empty. So, you know, I'm not going to stand outside. I just got in the car and sat. And I was kind of having a rough day and I zoned out. I didn't hear the pump click, you know, just to indicate that, you know, the tank is full. And before I could get, so this white man, he got out of his car because he was behind me, right? Walked up to my car and tells me to hurry up and move. Are you hearing what I'm saying to you?
No, I do, yes.
And besides, and it wasn't even that my car door wasn't closed. My door was open. So, asshole, this motherfucker is going to walk up to my car and tell me that I need to hurry up and move, that you're done pumping your gas, so you need to move. You know I lost my shit, right?
Well, yes, I rather would expect that.
I'm like, you, what the fuck are you doing? Who the hell do you think you are, white man? You need to take your white privileged ass and get the fuck away from my car. For one thing, you don't know who I am, you don't know what I'm going through, and who are you to tell me to hurry up? Wait your fucking turn and step away from my car.
How'd that go over?
He tried to say something. I'm like, if you don't get away from me, I'm calling the cops. Because at this point, you are harassing me, and it is binging on assault because you accosted me in my car.
So get the fuck away from me right now. Because he tried to say, well, you, and I'm like, I don't, you need not to say nothing else. Because then I will sit here all fucking day. I will move just so the other people can come and park so they can put gas in the car. I will pay for somebody's gas. Get away from me.
Well, I think I can help a little bit, or if nothing else, maybe assuage some of your frustration.
My anger?
Yeah. Because it's time to check in with E.W. Jackson. And E-Dub is, you know, he gets so head up about gay folks that you can't help but just be a little bit suspicious. And so he has assigned himself the right and power that tradition says is reserved to Saint Peter. You ready for this?
Wait, hold up. I'm sorry. Wait, before I forget, I just got a notice on my phone. Trump has decided to do a 5% tariff on all goods from Mexico until less people start to try to come into this country. So I just wanted to throw
probably to pay for his stupid fucking wall. See, right. I told you
okay,
they pay for the wall.
Good.
Yeah.
Motherfucker. Jesus.
But no, he's a. E-Dub gets real excited about gay people, and now that Pete Buttigieg is out there running for president, he about can't control himself. Get the hockey puck.
They brought that mess into the temple of God in the same way Pete Buttigieg is trying to bring homosexuality into the church of God. They brought that mess into the temple of God, and Josiah cast it out of there. So he tore down the ritual booze of the perverted persons. That's where they actually had homosexual sex in the temple of God, claiming that they were doing this as an act of worship of God. That's exactly what Pete Buttigieg has just said when he says his relationship with a man married to another man has drawn him closer to God. He's no different than a temple prostitute. And spiritually, it's no different.
You see what I mean about how he says a man, like he wants one, like he needs one, like he yearns for one.
Like he's had one.
Yeah, well, okay, I'll go there with you. But that ain't all.
Because the way he's saying it is like, oh, a man. Oh, my God, a man.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's more.
He's claiming that engaging in what God condemns somehow brings him closer to God. That's what the temple prostitutes were there for. They were there to persuade people, to make people believe that going into the temple and having perverse sex in the temple somehow made you closer to God.
You know, not to brag or anything, but I've known people to holler. Holler, God, 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 or I may have hollered it a few times myself.
Look, you've heard of Jill Scott, right?
Yeah.
This one of her songs, and when she's talking about that, she's like, how many times was God called last night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she wasn't talking about at church.
Nope. But in the ancient world, they did have temple prostitutes. Seriously, especially like in Babylon, it was a duty of women to go and serve the goddess one day a year, and just provide a day of service to the goddess, and people would come to it's kind of weird in the ancient world. There's evidence to suggest that the religion industry controlled two things: the recipe for beer and prostitution. it worked, pretty long lasting business model. But anyway, he's not done.
Now, how about reading that, Mayor Pete? Folks, let's just tell it like it, T-I-T-S, as they say. If you don't repent and receive Jesus Christ as your true Lord and Savior, which means you renounce sin and you renounce the past, and you continue in this, I'm proud of who I am, God made me who I am, and you, these folks continue to say they're homosexuals, they're proud of it, and they're going, that's the way they are, and everybody's got to deal with that and bow down to that and all of this nonsense. These people are going to die and go to hell.
Like I said, he's given himself the traditional role of St. Peter at the pearly gates.
Bob, I'm going to, did you know I was going to hell?
Oh, well, I mean, it's going to be so much more interesting. All the interesting people are there.
I mean, all the interesting people.
As long as they keep Billy Graham and Jerry Falwell and Lester Maddox and George Wallace and all in a different room.
Hitler, you know, all the racist, bigot, homophobic, Islamophobic, you know, homophobic, misogynistic, you know, keep them all in their own little their special part. Remember, you know, their special part of hell. There's a special part of hell for those people. I'm going to be over with the cool kids.
Right.
You know, the ones that, you know, didn't go to class and was smoking behind the bleachers and, you know, in school.
Yeah.
I'm going to be hanging out with those guys.
Yeah, so Pete Buttigieg is going to hell because E.W. Jackson says so. And
so.
Right. But wait, there's more because he's...
Oh, stop!
No. He's got to explain to us where the homosexuals come from.
Because there's only one penalty that is fit for that, and the penalty is death. Now, I'm not talking about hurting anybody or killing anybody. I'm not talking about physical violence against people. I'm talking about the eternal death. I'm talking about eternal damnation for your sin. See, nobody's going to hell because they are homosexual. Nobody's going to hell because they're a drunkard. Nobody's going to hell because they're a liar. People are going to go to hell because they refuse to accept Jesus Christ's death on the cross for their sins and refuse to repent and turn away from that wickedness and allow him to be their Savior and their Lord. It's not the sin that's going to condemn them to hell, except the sin of refusing the sacrifice that's already been made for that sin. And when you proclaim that sin as normal and healthy and right, and that you're proud of it, you can't possibly be repentant, and you can't possibly go to heaven.
Lie.
So, Mayor Pete, deal with that.
Thank you.
And all of your followers, deal with that. See, I don't have the luxury of an opinion about homosexuality. I've got the word of God on it. I've got the truth on it. And so what exactly are we Christians supposed to do? We're supposed to submit ourselves to a lie and deny and blaspheme God along with them. Because what Pete Buttigieg said was not only a lie out of the pit of hell, it was a direct blasphemy against God. Because he's giving credit to God for a work of the devil. The devil makes homosexuals, not God. The devil makes transgenders, not God. He perverts their minds and perverts their thinking. And who knows, he maybe messes with them physiologically. They get molested at a young age and confused in their sexuality. And then everybody's now expected to celebrate.
Yeah. So here's the thing. That is hate speech, pure and simple. But it gets to hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment and masquerade as freedom of religion. If that's freedom of religion, then their religion is hate.
It's hate. But when he was, you know, it's what pisses me off about people like him and all these hate-filled motherfuckers, you know, because see, when they said that, you know, I'm going to hell because I'm this, because I haven't repented, and blah, blah, blah,
And the only thing, when people come at me, I mean, it's been a long time since anybody's come at me, but I just say, the only thing I say to people when they do this and say shit, I'm like, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever.
Yeah, not who so heterosexual ever.
Whosoever, you know, who so white believes in it, who so black male believes in it, who so motherfucking ever, and that's the gospel according to Tracy.
Yes, right.
And, that means
should not die, but should have everlasting life. Right. Yeah, I've got that. I've got that translation.
Everlasting.
I've got the Tracy
ever
Bible.
Fucking, you know, an ever fucking lasting life. It doesn't say anything about repenting. It doesn't say anything about, casting off your sins and all this. And it says, whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Which I believe to mean that I'm not going to hell, motherfucker. And again, that's the translation of the gospel according to Tracy.
I got a note here from Billable Rick. Subject line, riddle me this, Batman. Great minds must think alike. Earlier today, I responded to a Trump tweet about how the Democrats who investigated him had committed crimes rather than him and his crime family with the line, riddle me this, Batman. Just a short while ago, on your program, Bob, Tracy began her call with the same phrase. I never would have dreamed that I'd have such low regard for a U.S. president to refer to him as Batman. The U.S. is definitely swirling down the toilet bowl and is desperately trying to grab the rim to prevent itself from being sucked down into the sewer. See you tomorrow on the front porch. Thanks, Billable Rick. Batman. Yeah, right.
Riddle me this. I mean, again, it's getting to that point. I mean, between, you know, we're getting it, we're being attacked from all different angles. I mean, we got these, you know, we got E-Dub, and we got, you know, the Trump pansies. I mean, it's just, and everybody is just acting as though this is okay. This is normal. Why are you Democrats so upset? And it's like, it's not even about me being a Democrat. It's about me just being a basic fucking simple human being that has empathy. That, you know, even before I fell in love with Jan, I have always been an ally to the LGBTQ community. I was devastated in 2008 when Prop 8 became law in the state of California. It was a hateful, hateful amendment. And it's just, you know, and thank God it got overturned. But I am so tired. It is so fucking exhausting. With all these people, this minority of people, because like you know, we all know, these assholes are in the minority. There's more of us than there are of them. But the problem is, they are in control. They have the power. They're the ones in Louisiana and Ohio and Alabama and Georgia and all these other places determining what a woman can do with her body. They are all these people who are telling, you know, who are just saying, well, you know, it's okay to shoot a black person, you know, down in the streets because I'm a cop and it's okay, you know, or hell, I'm just George Zimmerman or this other chick in wherever the hell she was that shot an old black man. It's okay because these people don't matter. So it's like, it's becoming increasingly frustrating because every time I turn on the news or every time I open up, you know, my email to whatever atrocity has happened to a black person, to a transgender person of color. I mean, like the poor girl that was in Texas, who, you know, transgender female, who got into a fender bender with this guy. The guy pulls her out of his car and proceeds to beat the living hell out of her. And then a couple of months later, she winds up dead. But they're saying that one had nothing to do with the other.
Really? What are the odds that she is killed within 2 months of being viciously and horribly attacked? And there, back to her being attacked, the people who stood around and not only watched, but filmed it. Now, I understand there are people who are filming it so people could see what happened, but nobody stepped in to help her. No one. Because, you know, why should we? This country, I mean, not to say that this country was, you know, a wonderful, I mean, I wouldn't live anywhere else but here, but I don't, that was before Trump. I'm telling you right now, if I could get the fuck out of here, I would. But then there's that part of me that I'm like, I'm not, I was born here. My family has a bigger right to be in this country than a lot of motherfuckers that do. So I'm not going anywhere. I want to stay here and fight. But it's just like, God damn. You know, I don't, you know, like I said, most of us don't have the luxury of picking up and saying, fuck the United States, I'm gone. I don't have that luxury. I know you don't have that luxury. I know a lot of the people that listen to the horn do not have that luxury. So what do we have to do? We have to fight. We have to vote. We have to be in all these assholes' faces, the ones that can, knocking on motherfucking doors, march, because the march don't do shit. You know, these yearly women's marches and all that? Fuck that. What is that going to do? I don't see any results, do you?
Not so far, no.
No. So at this point, I mean, I'm almost at that point. You know, I'm stating about guerrilla warfare. I mean, just, you know, sneaking up on motherfuckers and just all in their faces, and then constantly barraging people with what these motherfuckers are not doing for you, and why do you insist on voting for them?
Well,
because they're doing nothing.
I sit around, Tracy, thinking about this stuff. And it boggles my mind because I hear people talking about how, you know, we can reach the Trump voters if only we will address their economic anxiety,
racism,
and
they're
it makes
racist.
And it makes
people.
Me scream. There's nothing that, you know. If you put on, I mean, great. Like I said, maybe the whole Mueller report needs to be read to the entire nation 3 or 4 times till we finally get it, if it can be gotten, by virtue of the way it's written. But then again, I realized they don't give a shit. They honestly and earnestly don't give a shit, Tracy. They don't care. Again. They don't care what he does. If he goes out on Fifth Avenue and shoots someone, they will vote for him in November 2020. There is nothing.
In some places, they will vote twice. Nothing we can say. Nothing we can do.
Because the thing that they care most about is having their hate, having their bigotry and their bias constantly confirmed by a mentally ill septuagenarian, lifelong pathological liar. And that's it.
And that's it. I mean, when Trump started his campaign back in 2015, and he descended down that escalator, it was manna from heaven. It was like the heavens opened up and the angelic choir started singing. Because he was their Messiah. He's their fucking Messiah, Bob. It just hit me. He's their Messiah.
Yeah. Well, see, this morning on MSNBC, they had John Meacham on. You know, he's a historian. And he got a little bothered as, you know, once again, I get confirmed. You know, I was talking about the gobbledygook language that Mueller used.
Right.
And he said, by virtue of the gobbledygook language, he created openings for Trump to misinterpret it. He said, I think the biggest headline was that wonderful double negative. You know, if we thought he'd not committed a crime, we would have said so.
Right.
He said, if you saw that sentence as an editor, you'd fix it. It's too convoluted. But then he said this, comparing Mueller's report to Trump talking about it, and I think I don't always agree with the guy, but I do in this case. Mueller was speaking the language of reason and fact. Trump was speaking the language of tribalism and ideology. And guess who's going to win that fight in this climate? It's going to be Trump, but that's, to me, the test of citizenship is to actually do what Mueller said and take a look at this report. Well, they're not going to. Because they're in the business of
believing.
Well, no, they're in the business of believing Trump as opposed to knowing what Mueller says. And then Mueller makes it worse by using gobbledygook language. And Meacham is right. If a competent journalistic editor, or God knows literary editor, had gotten a hold of that report, it would have come back with more blue pencil marks on it than has lately been seen. We're either going to take this country back by forming a massive coalition of people who are not economic anxiety ridden Midwestern racists. Or we're not going to take this country back.
No.
I don't think.
I really don't know if people are really understanding how serious this shit is. Because, you know, when they voted for Trump, they voted for racism. They voted for misogyny. They voted for everything that this country is against everything this country is supposed to stand for. They voted for what they think and feel this country and what they believe this country is supposed to stand for. This is the country of genocide, of manifest destiny, of slavery, of misogyny, all these things that has made what they feel has made this country the greatest country in the fucking world. So what's going on right now is great. This is the way it's supposed to be. You know, this is, you know, keeping women in their place, keeping black people, you know, in their place, keeping Hispanic people or, you know, the, you know, immigrants or what have you in Mexico, keeping black people in the ghetto and uneducated and in prison. These are, you know, everybody is supposed to have, you know, their place. And so, When we start stepping out of these places, people get offended, they get upset, they get pissed off, and they react. But before Trump, if they reacted, there was consequences to the way they were reacting. Now there isn't. I mean, there are some consequences. People are getting fired and, you know, quitting their jobs or whatnot and so forth. But it's not enough. There's no repercussions. There's no consequences to people's actions, so they can do whatever the fuck they want to do and be okay, and it's A-okay, because don't 45. So here we are. So like you said, at this point, you know, and, you know, like I think, I'm at that point. I'm going to have to start doing some research because I'm going to have to get involved. I'm going to have to find places, safe spaces for me to become more active. I'm going to have to be that activist that I've always been to a certain extent, but now the shit is real and the shit is hitting the fan and I can't play anymore. I mean, you know, calling into the program and venting and coming up with strategies are all well and good. But at this point, we need boots on the motherfucking ground. We need coalitions. We need coalitions between the LGBTQ community, between, you know, we need for one thing, the limousine liberals to shut the fuck up and listen to the people who these policies and things really affect.
The people who are paying the
prices. We don't need the people who are paying the price. The gay, the people, you know, the transgender community,
especially transgender community of color, who are being murdered, and the murder and suicide rates of these people is just ridiculous. Aside, you know, and aside from what's happening to, you know, young black men or just black women, period, at the hands of the police. What's happening because of redlining and keeping people from not being able to afford have affordable housing because there's no such thing as a living wage. We need to talk to these people, and we need this information out there, and we need the people who are running for president to get these messages, and not just president, but for Senate, for Congress, everybody. Because, you know, no matter what, we can talk a good game, but unless we're out there doing something, what's the point?
There we go.
I challenge my Horn family members. And like I said, I'm going to do my level best to get involved, because it'll be 2020 before we know it. And if November, the first Tuesday in November, or is it the second Tuesday?
It's the first Tuesday after the first Monday.
Okay,
In this
Tuesday
case, I think November
Monday
the 3rd.
We have to do something. We have to start making. I remember I had never, in 2008, when Obama was running for president, of course, I got a lot of shit because they're like, the black guy's not going to win. And I'm like, whatever, I'm going to throw my support behind him. The first time in my life, I was actually working on a campaign. I've never worked on a campaign before in my life. But I was knocking on doors. I was making phone calls. I was emailing. I was involved. And these are the things that we have to do, and we have to start it now. And I'm not even talking about getting behind anybody right now, because it's just too many people to get behind right now. But to get involved with groups that are listening and trying to get the messages out there that these candidates have to listen, they need to listen to, and being part of that and calling attention to the needs of the average motherfucker up in this country. I mean, like, when I was listening the other day, when you were talking about, was it yesterday, when Scott was talking about how he only had X amount of dollars to, you know, to get to the rest of the month or what have you, and I'm like, that don't make no sense. Nobody, even if you are on a fixed income, it should be an income that you can still live on.
Yeah, it should be an income
that
where you've got enough, where you don't run out of money before you run out of month.
Right. I mean, the only reason
greatest country in the world and all of that, right?
Right. The only reason why I don't have more months than money is because I have I do what I do in the cab, and because I have chance. That's the only reason why I don't run out of money before I run out of month. But if I wasn't part of a couple, I'd be fucked like everybody else. You know, they just passed a bill in California about finally putting a cap on people being, you know, landlords being able to raise their rent no more than 7%. But guess what? It's only for 3 years. So what are you going to do after those 3 years are up?
Right. Yeah.
It's like there needs to be concrete, unchangeable, just, you know, to help the people that are truly, when you say economic anxiety, motherfuckers, black people have been dealing with economic anxiety since, you know, the march of fucking time.
Well, you know, but, y'all kind of wrote the book on it.
Kind of wrote the fucking book on the shit, okay?
In many ways, and I've heard Malloy say this on a number of occasions, white folks are finally getting a little taste of what everybody else has known for a long damn time.
I told you, my pastor, God rest his soul, he was a Depression-era kid, you know, and he was saying, You know, when the Depression hit, it was just, for black people, it was just Tuesday.
Yeah.
I mean, it hit us hard.
Just another day of the week. Just another day in the week that ends in Y.
That ends in Y. It's like, this is what we've been dealing with forever. Welcome to our world, motherfuckers. Hello. But see, that's that part of, the thing is, people have to have empathy. And so, if you had empathy, if people truly had empathy, and saw and understood what people have been going through, they'd be like, wait a minute. You know, it wouldn't have taken, you know, like what Malari said, for white people to finally wake up and realize shit. But no, if you actually had empathy, and people who are in charge or who are running for office, who are running this country and our state and our state government and our local government, if they actually had empathy and cared about what other people are going through, we wouldn't be having this conversation, because there would be things set into place that we wouldn't need to have these conversations. But when you take away people's safety nets, when you say, you know, there's no poverty, excuse me, what? You know, you just need to pull yourself up by the bootstraps and go for it. And it's like I love the people.
Well, I mean, this is that's a big Republican talking point, Tracy. I can't tell you, you know, I mentioned earlier hearing Limbaugh during the whole Cletus hunt. I can't tell you the number of times that guy has recycled his argument that, let's see, what is it? How does it go? My friend, the poor in this country are not as poor as they would have you think they are. There's hardly a poor person, and he always says poor, you know, as a means of derision. There's not a poor person in this country that doesn't have a color TV. So they set themselves up as arbiters of what poor people can have and can't have. It's like that dickhead Louis Asparagus Gohmert saying, one of my constituents had hamburgers and beans in his cart, and he saw somebody with food stamps buying all these Alaskan king crab legs. Well, King Louis, let's sort this one out real quick. If that person did that, then they're going to starve for the rest of the goddamn month, because you can't buy a shit. You cannot buy a shit ton of king crab legs on a dollar a day from EBT.
Thank you.
At any rate, I got a roll, Tracy. But you've got
I do too.
You got a note here. Well, we got a note a little bit earlier from Renee. In D.C., Renee said, so I remember New Math and Hooked on Phonics, but this so-called method must be teachers hooked on the new myth. A mock slave auction sounds like fifth grade part two of the Achtung Nazi saluting babies of last week. Yeah, eye rolls and heavy sighs. Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, before you go, just wanted to ask you, speaking of, you know, putting ourselves, you know, not putting ourselves behind anybody until, you know, but did you see the clip that I sent you with Elizabeth Warren when she was on The View?
Oh, yes, and, yes, know, yes. Meghan I watched McCain. Oh, she took Meghan McCain to school and then took her out in the hall and paddled her.
And paddled her because, of course, she was chastising, you know, Elizabeth Warren, you know. I don't understand why you decided that you shouldn't, you know, be on Fox News, because there's so many people that are they're such good people, and you know, you're ignoring these people who, you know, want to hear blah blah blah. And Elizabeth, I know Elizabeth Warren just took a deep breath and like, oh, bitch, please, but.
But the thing is, you know, she really, Elizabeth Warren really is a teacher, and that's one of the things that I admire about her is her ability to teach people. And she did, you know, she didn't tell Meghan McCain that she was a revolting little Republican POS. She taught her. She taught her what's wrong with Fox News. And it was irrefutable on her part. And all Meghan McCain could do was say, well, you know, like, I still think, like, there are good people there. What about Shepard Smith? You do the whole upspeak thing, the whole Valley upspeak thing, so much better than I do. That was amazing, by the way. But she had nothing. She was completely schooled.
She had nothing. She was completely and totally schooled because she's like, no, Lena Gordon's like, I've done so far 88 town halls. Okay? I am reaching out to all different kinds of people, but I won't do it on Fox News. And it has, and she's like, you know, let me emphasize this. It has nothing to do with the people who watch Fox News. I am not going to, as the executives at Fox News, I am not going to let them use my name. You hear me, bitch? My name. To bring back advertiser dollars.
Right. They are not. I was surprised she didn't. She came very close to saying on my back, I think, because that was what I got out of it. I am not going to let a bunch of racist Fox News executives fundraise on my ass.
Mm-mm.
Nor should she. Nor should she. Tracy, have yourself a wonderful evening, dear.
You too.
All right. We'll talk soon. Be good. Bye now.
Bye.
The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver out in L.A. Let's see here. How do I make this work? You know, this is the... I hate the new Skype interface. It drives me bananas. I don't know how you take a call off hold. I mean, you'd think you would push the button, but you push the button and precisely nothing. Ah, there it is. Okay, good. So I'm going to share an email real quick because this is a dandy. Lady B does tremendous emails. That fifth grade teacher's conversation that day. Let's reenact history accurately, kids. History says blacks were slaves, so let's gather all the black students in the room together and pretend they're slaves in 2019. Later that day. What have you learned today, kids? That blacks were slaves and worthless, so just like my uncle says, we should continue to treat them as worthless. Well, yes, kids, blacks were slaves, but we were just pretending today. They're not really worthless. Yes, Miss Teacher, but Leroy and Latoya were so pathetic. They were slaves. I was able to buy Leroy for $50. $50 is gas money, and they had on chains. Blacks must be worthless. Worth less than us. I like Leroy, Miss Teacher, but now I know why my uncle hates blacks so much. I'm going to see them differently from now on. That's just your opinion, Timmy. It may not be right, but this is America, and you have a right to your ugly views. However, take pity on them and be nice. Black people always think life is harder for them anyways. So be nice, and they will be ever so grateful. Frankly, they should be. If we hadn't freed them, they would still be slaves. They're fucking kids, Bob, says Lady B. The degradation and marginalization has always been there, and it starts early. It's just cycled back to being more obvious and openly practiced again. If anyone out there thinks this is nothing, pretend you're a middle-aged black person and have had to live with these slights all your life. Then tell yourself to fuck off forever, thinking shit like that was no big deal. Continue to comfort the afflicted and tell the comfortable to go fuck themselves, Bob. I will do my doggondest every blessed evening, Lady B. Thank you. And that's true. You know, this is not a new phenomenon. This is a cycling back to an old phenomenon. And I think it's important that we pay attention to it in that sense. I'm just checking a couple other things real quick. Randy says, if they foist Biden or Hillary on us in 20, then there's no saving this country. It's already flushed, and I'm not voting for them. Incrementalism will only forestall the end. Well, I'm going to do what I did in 2016. I'm going to vote for my party's nominee. If I find somebody worthy of really getting out there and busting my ass for, I will. I got a list. I'm not going to trash Democratic candidates for the nomination. I think it's fairly obvious there are some who have no chance whatsoever. I think I'm cynical enough to think that there are some who are running to make a buck,
And I think there are some who sincerely think that they have what it takes to turn this country around. But I'm not going to trash them. I mean, there are a couple of candidates that I truly despise. Not on based on personality, but based on things they've done as office holders. But I'm not going to trash them. And again, I'm sort of over a barrel anyway, because I'm not going to get a primary vote until May of 2020. And by then, it should be all over but the shouting. Because there's no way 25 candidates make it all the way to the convention. It is financially unsustainable. And the only reason you would stay in would be to be a spoiler. So I think this crowd will winnow pretty quickly. But Jesus God, at a year, not quite a year before I get a vote in the primary, for me to run around singing hosannas of one candidate over another, I think the major candidates all have things to be spoken of positively. I think there are good things to be said for Elizabeth Warren, for Bernie Sanders. I think there are good things to be said for Cory Booker, for Kamala Harris. I don't know why I named the two old white people first. I apologize for that. There are good things to be said about Julian Castro, about Pete Buttigieg, about Beto. And I will leave it to someone else to say the negative things. I'm trying really hard to not pick at the scabs from 2016. And I really think that that is our best bet. It's our best chance, our best hope. I will not trash candidates. I'll say what I believe for my own part. I'm not excited about, I'm disturbed by, okay? And this applies to multiple candidates, so it's not a slam on anyone in particular. I am worried about the idea of having something that I think is not wise. I am worried about the idea of an 80-year-old plus president of the United States. I'm worried about running an imminent octogenarian in the 2020 race so that incumbent, maniacal, ignorant, certainly demented and probably mentally ill Donald Trump gets to run as the young guy, the youth. Jesus. So, I mean, that's just where I am with that. It's about 17 minutes left in the program, and let's check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Well, what have we here, Bob?
What have we here?
you and Tracy did a stellar call today. You teed up so many good things that one hardly knows where to begin. I hope Tracy is listening. I hope she is, because I would like to let her know, and you and the rest of the Horn family, that despite my meager situation here at the end of the month, and by the way, May of 2019 will go down in my life as the shittiest goddamn month that I have ever been through in recent memory. But I'm telling you, there's one more day of it, and then I never have to be in this sucky month again.
And you know, for a guy who survived brain surgery, that's saying something.
Oh, well, yeah. Brain surgery and a brain tumor and two divorces, okay? But I'm telling you, man, I checked today, and I've got 4 pennies, 3 pesos, and a British pound coin. So, May, fuck you. My resilience is marvelous. And this, in fairness, this month has been an anomaly in terms of income. And I won't bore the family with it again, but every year, like clockwork, the first quarter of the year, I hear from Social Security, and they tell me that I no longer qualify for the state of California to pay my Medicare Part B premium. And this year it happened as of the end of February. So May's Social Security check included me paying the premium for March, for April, and for May. And that's like $134 a pop. Now, when you take that out of a single Social Security check, it throws a big old fat wrench into the system for the month. So I'm lucky that I've made it. So anyway, that's and I talked to the guy with the county who administers the Part B Extra Help program here in California. And he's been promoted to another job, which he well deserves, because he's helped me for the last several years to dance with this. And he's put the case in the hands of two of his assistants, and they're going to be getting back to me end of this week, first part of the new week, hopefully with some good news that it'll get straightened out and things won't be quite as dire. But I'm telling you, Bob, I am a happy camper, because my happiness, my well-being, my aura, if you will, and it's hard to remember it, but I have to remind myself that circumstances don't really enter into it in terms of my essence. I've been rich. I've been poor. I've actually been homeless. I've been through many adventures over the years, and I've always managed to make it, you know, and it's that old Zen thing. The only way out is through. And it ain't fun. You're going to get kicked and shoved and prodded and poked, and, you know, life will turn you every way but loose. Okay. But if you can go through it and just dance with it like there's no tomorrow, I mean, really.
But as a practical matter, Scott, I have to ask, why do you continually have, year in, year out, have to go through this madness of getting fucked for the first quarter, and then, you know, you call the worker and you get unfucked, so you're going to get unfucked for the rest of the year. But what about those premiums you've already paid? You don't get those back, do you?
Well, I will probably, in years past, see, what it is, Bob, is you have to be at a certain income to qualify for the extra help. And this is not why I called, but just to make it clear, this is how it works. You've got to be at a certain income to qualify for the premium to be paid by the state. But once it's being paid by the state, it bumps you over the place where you'd be qualified for that to happen. But they don't change anything until the annual redetermination, where you fill out paperwork stating honestly where you are in terms of income, and then it throws a flag up. Now, and I've talked to my older brother about this. I've talked to friends. I even talked to a lawyer once about it. And the nearest we can figure is constantly every year, like the Swallows coming back to Capistrano, it's the mechanism is set that way to keep county workers and federal workers busy. Because you figure if it's happening to me, it's happening to many others.
Well, yeah, it sounds so absurd that it sounds like it can't help but be by design. By the way, Tracy sent a note and said, tell Scott I'm still listening.
Okay, good, because I've got good news. That's actually why I called. That's actually why I called, Bob. And this is for you and for Tracy and for the Horn family. And I know that you will tut, 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 and tisk, tisk, and shake your head and say, oh, there's that relentless optimist again, filling our heads with his, you know, happy thought nonsense. But give me a chance with this. All right. Now, you remember in 2016, Trump lost the popular vote by some 3 million votes.
True.
Okay. I think you will grant me that in America, in terms of eligible voters, there are more of our type of thinking people than there are of the other type of maybe not so clearly thinking people, to be charitable about.
Well, you know, not 90% of registered Republicans support him.
Well, that's all right. I'm not talking about them.
Demographically, you know, 40% is the ceiling to his approval.
Well, let me just say, Bob,
okay.
every instance in the news, every new outrage like you and Tracy were talking about, and that's detailed on this show day after day and week after week, there are people in this country who detest and deplore such nonsense. There are people in this country, eligible voters, mind you, who are not maybe like me, a raging liberal, okay? And maybe they're more moderate in some ways. They're certainly not far-right wing Republicans. Hell, there may even be some Republicans who are moderate in the old school Republican mold, who are seeing these things happening day after day, week after week, month after month, and now year after year. And they're keeping track of it in their heads. They know that this country is on the wrong track. They know that we are being led, and I have that in air quotes, by a moron. No, I changed that. A fucking moron, according to people who have actually worked with him in the government. We are being led, in air quotes, by a moron who is inept. He is an egomaniac. He is a narcissist. He's got something wrong with his head, Bob. And Tracy will get a kick out of this. I'm in an odd position in recent months. Because more often than not, I hear about these things, about like the guy say wanting to know if the woman was an Uber driver, and then proceeds to berate her and question her citizenship. I have to say something like, honky, please. And I'm white, Bob.
No. That's okay, because there are millions of us in this country who find ourselves, even as, you know, me, so pale I burn under the refrigerator bulb. You know, I look up and go, white people.
Yeah.
And to
finish my point about the exhibits, you know, they talk about Exhibit A, Exhibit B, Exhibit C in a trial.
Mm-hmm.
All of these instances of madness and intolerance and downright hatred and stupidity and un-American, and I don't use that word lightly, but un-American behavior by people in this country, people are keeping track of it. And they know, and I've used this analogy before, imagine a green felt-covered table with chairs around it and a big stack of chips in the center. And they know that in November of 2020, somebody's going to win that pot, those chips, that jackpot. And it damn well better be us. And people are going to behave in a manner that's consistent with winning that pot. And it simply comes down, I think, to electing someone who is first and foremost electable, someone who is first and foremost capable, someone who is first and foremost a lover of the best things about this country, and getting that person nominated And then no matter who your original choice might have been, for Democrats and moderate independents and even some sheepish Republicans, making sure that Trump does not spend another day in office after January 19th of 2021. And if we can do that, we have a chance. We have a hope. But if we can't, well, you've heard me say it before, we're all screwed, Bob.
Well, yeah, and by the way, I got
serious about this.
I know, and I got a note from James in Illinois. He said, "There's 3 million illegals in California, and Scott hiding half of them at his place, and they're voting illegal."
Yeah. yeah, I wish they were here. I could use the company.
That was cowbell worthy.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, Bob, it's and what is the deal with E-dubs? You know what I think.
And I, do tell.
You know, for a moderately straight person, I have fairly accurate gaydar. I think E-dubs is crying out. He's almost weeping for the happy solace of a well-placed cock. You know? To hear him tell it, it's almost a
man,
thing.
A man.
A man.
I mean, it's straight out of those old Warner Brothers cartoons. Remember there was some, I forget which particular character it was, but there was a woman who would go, "A man."
Yeah, yeah.
That's E-dub.
Yeah, and this, now I found one courtesy of before I do that, you were talking about Elizabeth Warren was a teacher once.
Yeah.
Anyone who hasn't seen it or hasn't seen it in a while on YouTube, there's a PBS documentary from like the early 2000s called The Secret History of the Credit Card. And she's in that. She knows her stuff when it comes to how ordinary people get ripped off and fucked over in this country.
Right. And one of the things, you know, she knows she has an encyclopedic understanding of finance and consumer credit and the way mm-hmm. money moves and how it works. And what adds to her value as a candidate for me is the fact that she is pretty clearly in possession of the ability to get up a learning curve on just about any topic mm-hmm. awfully damn quickly.
Yeah, watch that. If you haven't seen it or in a while, watch that damn documentary. Some of it is dated, but I'm telling you, she was very impressive in the bits that she's in, the interview segments, the secret history of the credit card. But I can top E-dubs. My online pal, Mark Evanier, who will be going to his 50th Comic-Con this July. He's been to all of them, Bob. You ready for that? That's pretty damn impressive, I think.
That's amazing.
But he quotes, yes. Mark quotes, I saw this on his blog the other day. He said, "I just read a quote online attributed to Archbishop Charles Joseph Chaput of the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. He supposedly said," And this is where it gets better than E-dubs, some of his biblical quotes and notions. Archbishop Chaput says, "A real man is one who will bring his wife to Christ rather than to an orgasm." Now, if that ain't crazy talk, Bob, I don't know what is.
Mm.
And as you noted before, she may
see
God and yell God's name. But isn't and, that crazy?
Yeah, I've had identification from two members of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee. Lee in New York says, "Lena Hyena in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you know, a man, a man." And James in Illinois says, "That was from Popeye." So maybe they're the same character because,
really?
You know, yeah.
Well, it seems to me that the character that you're talking about was like a mountain woman. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I can see her because she levitates off the ground and her legs kick out And she, yeah, and every time I hear EW, now that, every time I hear EW say, oh, man, that image goes, you know, from neuron to neuron, synapse to synapse, and I'm watching it back in the back of my skull.
Well, the levitating thing may be olive oil in Popeye.
No, that's not olive oil. Her character has a name, and she's Lena Hyena.
Huh.
Yeah. But anyway, I got to get out of here because it's 9 o'clock.
Oh, well, you're right. You're right. But anyway.
One more day. Scott.
It may not appear so, but I'm telling you, there are better things ahead because people are onto this clown. And people, their votes matter. And between now and November of 2020, if we are not doing everything within our power to bone up on the topics and hone in on what the candidates are saying and find someone who's electable, who is responsible, who is not crazy, we can get it done, Bob.
Well, and you know, this is a little moment of optimism. Billboards are already going up in Kentucky against Mitch McConnell, and
good.
It's being financed at a grassroots level with fundraising on social media. That's two.
Well, wasn't there a Democratic mayor of like Louisville or somewhere down there that? There was talk about this guy was the perfect guy to go up against someone
the last thing I heard, and I apologize for not being able to remember her name, she came very close to winning a congressional seat this year and unseating an incumbent Republican.
She's a veteran, right?
She's a veteran. She's a combat pilot.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
And so, you know, maybe she's got that chance. But he's gonna have a shit ton of money, even though he is the least liked senator in the United States. He has
even less liked than Ted Cruz.
Yes, he's at like 15-17% among his own constituents. He's at 15-17% approval among Kentuckians.
I don't know
how you get elected, you know, because gerrymandering doesn't go into a Senate race. It's a statewide election. I don't know how you get reelected at 17% approval.
That boggles my mind. I had no idea that among people in the Commonwealth of Kentucky voters that they detest him that much. They have that low estimation of his humanity and his personhood and his skills. I mean, granted, he's skilled at fucking people over and working the system, you know, for a certain few. So yeah, he's got mad skills. They're just they're aimed at doing the wrong damn thing. Jesus, you blew my mind there, Bob, and that's saying something.
Well,
mercy.
That would be a tremendous victory. Let me see here. We may have something to end the program on that'll tickle us all. Thanks to the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department.
I watched Wanda Sykes last night.
You hurt yourself.
I thought I was gonna die, Bob. That first 20 minutes or so is priceless. The rest of it's great too. But.
Vix? the Vix stuff. Why are you
Vix
trying to hurt
rum?
Us? Why are you poisoning us? It's Vix.
Yeah.
I remember
Mommy,
that.
Mommy, you know. He's burning me.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah, so here we go, courtesy of Lee in New York.
All right.
Gotcha.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, Scott, have
all
a good
right,
night,
Bob.
Man.
Great show. Tomorrow's gonna be a pip.
Oh yeah, and that reminds me. Program note for tomorrow. I got to be up at 5:30 to take Ferg to work. It's a 12-hour shift. He gets off at 7.
Good Lord.
So there may be, you know, the last time, last Friday, he got off at 6 and we started at 7. I got to figure out some way to make this all work. So I'll put something on social media. Hopefully, you know, I'll be here at 6. That's my plan. But, you know, it's West Virginia. He's got a job. That's a great thing.
Hey, listen, you know, count your blessings, name them one by one, as the old song goes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I felt like it was probably a good idea for me to just put that out there as a program note. Scott, have a good evening.
You too, Bob. Take care, and my best to the entire Horn family from sea to shining sea.
All right. Good deal. Later. And so we come to the end of the program. I ran over by about 5 minutes, but that's okay. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Kiazzi. You can do it, Bob. 6 there is only 5 here. LOL. Math. Ciphering problems again. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to Greg, our new Patreon subscriber. Thank you to Jack for jumping in here at the end of the month. Thank you very kindly, Jack. And thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of our Patreon subscribers and our PayPal subscribers and the a la carte members of the family who keep it going day to day, week to week. Thank you so very much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this years-long ongoing conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room this evening. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years this year, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.